When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Sewing Out Loud, the official podcast of ZD Sewing Studio. Here are your hosts, ZD and Mallory.
Sewing Out Loud.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Mallory Donahue.
And I'm ZD Donahue, or we could be called Zig and Zag by our supporter Amanda Kearns.
We got the biggest compliment, and actually I can't remember who wrote the original thing. I'm sorry. I think she's like a newer group member. And she said that she and her husband listened to our bias podcast in the car.
Right.
And
he was laughing.
Yes. And he was laughing. And he said, I don't know what they're talking about, but they're funny. And they're like the car talk of sewing. And, you know, I just could see ZD, you know, over at her side of the house reading the comment and going, yes.
Because they're my idols.
Yeah, we like car talk.
I have to tell my car talk story.
Yes, you do.
Maybe you don't know. Do you know it's about you?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I used to drive, Mallory and I used to drive back and forth to St. Louis, which is like a two-hour drive, and she had, you know, sports acro competitions and all this stuff. Okay, so we're driving, and we're listening to car talk, and it's like a Saturday morning or whatever it was, and, you know, they're talking, somebody calls in about their problem, and they talk about this, like, puff of white smoke, and I said, well, you know, that's because they're not, all of their gasoline isn't combusting. That's why you get, you know, the white smoke. There's something wrong with their carburetor. At that time, cars had carburetors. At that time they didn't, but all these, they're all reruns. So when they were talking about some car with a carburetor, and, you know, they come up with the answer, and they say, well, the reason there's white smoke is it's not combusting all the gasoline. It's too rich of a, you know, blend and all. And Mallory just about, Mallory's like 11. And
yeah.
She looks at me and like, Mom.
Oh, wow, Mom.
You're so smart. You know, so then the next thing they're talking about is this guy has a Toyota truck, blah, 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 and it won't start. And he has to, I don't know if anybody knows what pop the clutch is called about, is, but you, if you have a manual clutch on a car, you used to be able to, you could start it by getting on a hill and letting the car roll, and then you did, what you did is you popped the clutch and put it into gear and it would start, and you didn't need the starter on your car. Well, this guy was having every place he went, he didn't know if his car would start or not, and it made this noise and did this, you know, and he always had to be on a hill to pop his clutch if he knew he was going to get away. And I said, well, there's something wrong with his starter. That's what's wrong with the car. He needs a new starter if it's making that grinding noise and everything. And then the car talk guy's like, well, you need a new starter. And Mallory's like, Mom. Now, the reason I do know this is my father was in the automotive business. So, like, it wasn't totally out of my realm. But to impress a child, a girl child that is, like, you know, 11, 12 years old, is a hard thing to do because they think you're, like, amazing. And then right about that prepubescent time, you know, they go to bed and they wake up one morning and you're the stupidest woman that ever walked on earth. And I can't wait. I always loved it when it happened. Loved it when it happened to Hillary. And now I will love it when it happens to Mallory.
No.
So what I decided would be a good idea was, now they repeated the same show on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I could listen to all the shows on Saturday and then somehow get Mallory in the car on Sunday and totally impress her. Like every week that I do absolutely, and especially like the puzzler that they gave
that,
you know, those were harder than any of the
listen
cards
ahead of time.
But anyway, I never did it, but it was a good thought because I could have impressed, I could have again become a smart woman to my daughter.
I did always kind of like it in car talk when they were like, well, you'll just have to park it backwards with the left window open and then da da da.
And then the other thing I always like that they said that I say in this podcast very often is, if all else fails, check the owner's manual.
That's
right.
Right.
Yes.
Well, I have such a great segue. So
you do.
I do for the podcast topic today. So before we started recording for real, I did. I know it's great. I did a little sound check before we started recording because, Mom, there are those who test and those who wish they did.
That's right.
Isn't that right?
That is absolutely correct.
And this goes
in all things.
Yeah, I was going to say, yes. Not just sewing, like maybe cooking.
Right.
That's a good one.
Right.
You know, anything where you're, you know, making something.
I actually have on a pair of test pants today. I decided I don't know if they fit me right or if I like them, so I'm wearing them at home to see.
I remember
those
pants.
I know. And I'm deciding whether to put them in the donate box or what. So I'm test pantsing today.
So you wouldn't have just worn them out to something special.
Well, not something special.
That's right. Right. You're testing.
But anyway,
first.
I thought, good day to test my pants.
This podcast topic was suggested to us by Erin Van Handel, and she has a blog. And you know what? It's called, I think it's called Sie Macht, and that means she makes in German, I believe. Sorry if I mispronounced your blog title, Erin. I apologize, but she's a neat person, a neat stitcher. I'm happy to have her in the group. And I think she direct messaged me on Instagram and was like, "You talk about when to make a muslin or not," and da 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 da. And then I thought, "Oh well, a muslin is a test of a garment, you know." And we always talk about testing. And while we say that there are those who tested, those who don't, I thought maybe we could get into a little more about what we mean about testing and when and how to do muslins and things like that.
Yeah.
So I think,
or, I mean, you're testing a stitch.
Well, okay,
sometimes.
So let's start with that.
Yeah, that's the simplest thing, I guess.
Let's start with one of the easiest things that you can do to be successful in your project is to test out a stitch.
Right.
Either on your serger or your sewing machine.
Right.
What are you looking for, Mom, when you test a stitch?
Well, I'm looking for durability and that it holds.
Yep.
And I'm looking at the neatness or the pristineness of it. Does it look nice? Right?
Yes.
And is it giving me the effect I want? For instance, a seam, I'd be wanting a different effect than a top stitching, right?
I was thinking that. And then also, right. On our stretchy garments, if you're constructing those like on your
right.
serger, I will tell people to stretch that
seam. Do that test stretch.
Test the stretch right. of the stitch.
Well, you know, even on a woven, you want to open that seam and sort of, you know, pop it or put some tension on it and see what happens. If it comes apart, you need to do some adjusting on your machine.
We also talked about, oh, well, this podcast hasn't been published yet because the audio got corrupted. But we talked about,
that's right.
We'll fix that and it's going to come out in the future.
But in my mind, it's been published.
Yeah, it's a really good episode when we finish it, when we fix it. But we talk about when you have to take a stitch out.
Right.
How it's best if it's like a longer stitch.
Right.
So we told you in that episode.
Well, you know, another, yeah,
to use like the longest stitch possible. So if you are
right.
using a heavier fabric or if you're stitching a knit on your sewing machine or something, you might not want to be at that 2.5 stitch length.
Correct.
That's the default for your straight stitch. You might actually want to be like at a 3.5.
Right.
That might be top stitching is often longer.
Right.
Well,
so you have this heavier fabric and you decide you want to go to a 3 or a 3.5. Are you guys on those old domestic machines? We're talking going down to like a 10, 8 or 10, you know, stitches per inch or whatever. But open that seam up, press that seam open like you intend it to be.
Uh-huh.
And is it okay? Or are you seeing like gaps of, you know, light between your, you know, your seam? Is your seam what you want it to be?
And that goes along with our three thread narrow advocacy. Okay. Oh, we talked about stretching the stitch, but someone did ask in the group, they said, "Hey, I'm going to be working on French terry, which is like sweatshirt fleece.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little thicker." And this person asked, "Would you use a three thread narrow?" And then someone tagged me and they're like, "Hey, Mal, what would you do?" And I said, "Yeah, I would. I'd test it."
Right.
And I have a garment from, it was designed by a good friend of mine, Quinn Myers. She owns a lingerie label called She in Reverie. And it is a silk jersey cardigan. And it is actually the band of the cardigan, the button, you know, like placket
the
and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It is done with a 4-thread.
Uh-huh.
And I think that maybe if I had constructed this garment on my own, I probably would have done it with a 3-thread. But this garment is not meant to stretch a lot. It does not have a lot of negative ease.
And you know, a placket like that, you may want some more stability.
Exactly.
Right.
So sometimes you're working with a knit and you're almost treating it like it's a woven.
Right.
So it depends on how you are using the fabric.
You know, I will use a 4-thread sometimes on a one-way stretch.
There you go.
Knit. Yeah. That seems to be the thing, because I don't want it to stretch on, you know, the grain that doesn't stretch.
Yes.
You know, I want that there. I want that stability there.
Yeah, so it can depend on what you want. So I didn't really get into this on that post, but I said I'd use the 3-thread, but I think I said, you know, test it out, see what you like. But it might not have been terrible for that person to use a 4-thread, depending on the garment.
You know, another thing is, people will say, well, my serger does a lousy 3-thread or whatever. And, you know, we can go through a whole argument about, well, if you work hard enough or, you know, adjust tensions enough, you can make your 3-thread
work.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe it's not worth it for a person. I mean, if you're spending half of your sewing time adjusting a stitch,
right?
Screw it.
Yeah.
Use the one you can get that works.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean,
yeah, you know, there are sewing police, but they don't know where you live.
Well, and we aren't the sewing police.
Right.
We are just the sewing
ambassadors.
No,
diplomats.
No, this is what we're doing. We're over here in our sewing studio. We are having a party. We are having a good time with our 3-thread narrow.
That's right.
And if you wanted to know how we're having a good time, we're telling you. Okay?
We're having a
and
good time.
You
right.
can choose to have a good time with that or with something else.
That's
okay?
right. That's
That'll
right.
be it. So after we get finished with this 3-thread narrow video we're working on, we'll make a video where it says, sometimes people recommend sewing techniques and you don't have to get all pissed off when someone recommends
That's
it.
Right.
So anyway, that is,
you know what we are? We're the sewing friends, because is it Nina Reed? Is she the one who told her husband or her friend or something that my friend Zidi and Mallory said, she like quoted us someplace, and the person said, just because, I think it was her husband, just because you listen to them and their podcast, it doesn't mean they're your friend and you're on, you know, you're a member of their Facebook group.
Yes, we are. Yes, it does.
We are.
You know why?
He is so wrong.
You know why? I know that too, because I listen to some podcasts and those people are my best
friends.
That's
right. Well, you know, Brian is my airless friend, and I tell everybody, like, my friend Brian.
That's right.
He's the professional.
That's right.
And he says he does the same thing with me, only in sewing.
So test your stitches, okay, buttonholes.
Oh, my gosh.
This has come up a couple times, especially with jeans.
Yep.
When you test for anything, really try and duplicate the situation.
The fabric, how it's folded, is it on the edge, whatever, because it will be different, guys.
Yeah, so a lot of people were like, I was testing a buttonhole. My machine made a beautiful buttonhole, I imagine, on just like two layers of fabric that were under the entire foot, you know.
Right.
And then this person said, but then I went to do it on my jeans waistband. And it looked terrible.
Right.
And that's because your jeans waistband, there's a big,
it's a totally
huge
different
seam.
Animal than anything else.
There's a big, huge seam on three sides of your buttonhole, right? And then it's this thick
and
denim.
It's
top stitched, all this stuff.
It's got some stretch in it.
It may seem like a total pain in the butt to like make a fake waistband and then run it through your machine. But it would be worth it.
But there are those who test and those who wish they test.
Oh, and taking out a buttonhole.
You know, the one thing you brought up, and this isn't exactly about testing, but it is. But it's not. But it is. But if I didn't think about bringing this up. You said two layers of something. Your machines are meant to sew on two layers of fabric. It's
great.
Why you have a feed dog, you know, and a presser foot there. And they're meant to sandwich. So whenever you're testing a stitch, you need two layers. So, and often, if you're taking your machine to someone to be repaired, you have a repair guy, a serviceman, and he gives you a test stitch back, and it's on one layer of fabric. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Uh-huh.
Okay. It should be on two layers of fabric.
That's right.
Okay. And it should be a fairly, let's not have it some thin nothing fabric. It should be like at least like quilting cotton, yeah. Sort of. Two layers of muslin is not what I would consider to be on a good two layers of fabric.
I have to tell this story, and I don't know if I've told it on the podcast before, but I think it's worth it.
Oh, well, sometimes I tell stories over and over again. Did you notice?
I know. I know. No. Okay. So.
Oh. And as far as zig and zag, I want to be zag. You be zig.
I'm zig.
I want to be zag.
Whatever you say,
like zag. I think zag sounds a little bit more sophisticated.
So I had I did a machine delivery. This woman bought this machine when we had the store. It was like a $4,000 machine. So it had thousands of stitches in it, you know, or hundreds of stitches. I don't know. And when I say stitches, I mean like decorative stitches. And decorative stitches on a sewing machine are so much fun. I know a lot of people are like, I don't need those. I don't want to pay for those. Well, heads up, you're not actually paying for the decorative stitches. That's not what actually costs money in the machine. But anyway, moving on from that, I told her, hey, this machine has hundreds and hundreds of these decorative stitches. It's a really great idea to go through and stitch them out so that you know what they look like,
right,
on fabric. And it's a good way to get to know your machine. And some of them are really big. You don't understand how big they are until you stitch them out.
It's also really fun to see which ones you like.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So stitch them out and then hang them up in your sewing room, you know. And I think I showed her that, like, we had done this on, like, a 8x8 or a 6x6 piece of fabric, right, you know. So something else – well, I'll come back to that part. I'll move forward in time and then back in time. So she comes in. She says, oh, my gosh, this machine, it just does not work. It's forming these stitches so terribly. And I was like, oh, like, let's check this out. Because that, you know, like a brand new machine, that really doesn't happen a lot. You know, it can, of course. There could be something, an outlier, something go wrong.
Usually OE.
Yeah. So what she'd done was she'd chosen these decorative stitches, and they're heavy stitches. They're dense satin stitches in shapes like triangles or scallops or circles or something.
So there's
like that.
What we call a buildup of stitches.
Mm-hmm. And she'd done it on one layer of like cheap, like poly prom dress fabric from the big box store.
Right.
And I remember I can see it in my head. It's like, yeah, purple and it was kind of iridescent-y.
Oh, yeah, like it had two different thread,
yes,
colors in it or something.
And then
something.
I think she,
yeah,
stitched on it with, like, blue thread. Like, I can still see this in my mind's eye. And it was just crumpled to crap.
Okay,
and,
question is, how many stitches,
yes,
did she,
yeah,
do?
Okay, yeah. Yes, yeah, exactly. I was like, man, you did, like, 15 stitches
before
on this
fabric.
Before
you realized this was crap.
And you just kept going.
I just kept making crap.
Well, and she was, you could see them. Okay, you could see the stitches.
Oh, my God, I love this stuff.
And they didn't look that terrible, but she was dissatisfied with, yeah, how the fabric looked.
Well, right, the fabric was puckering.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, no, I thought it was kind of funny. I was like, I mean, I guess I would have stopped like a row short of this or two rows, but whatever, you know. Okay, so she just, I don't know what she thought. And actually, like I said, the stitch itself didn't look so terrible. But I said to her, you can't expect these stitches to look, you know, a stitch that perforates the fabric these stitches are right up next to each other. They are below 1 millimeter.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
they are lined up next to each,
yeah,
other.
Yeah, they're itty bitty.
It's perforating the fabric.
Yes.
Yes.
Perforating
it
the fabric.
It is challenging the integrity of the fabric you're putting them on.
Absolutely. I said, you can't expect this type of stitch to just, like, you know, not distort the fabric without some other kind of support,
right,
on here, like a stabilizer. And then I said to her, remember during your delivery, and I'd like to tell people that this is something I used to do, we would use a fabric that was like a drapery lining fabric,
right,
to show people stitches. And I'd have them do a satin stitch on this fabric and just run it through, and we would get some tunneling.
Show them that it will tunnel. Right.
Yeah. So this satin stitch is a short, wide zigzag, and it would tunnel up. And be like, oh, we don't like that,
right,
you know. And then I'd just take the smallest piece of tearaway stabilizer, just the itty-bittiest little piece, and I'd put it under the fabric and then have them do it again, and it would look like a beautiful satin ribbon,
right,
was laid down on this fabric. And I said, hey, we didn't change our tension. We didn't change our
needle,
anything,
our thread,
else.
Nothing. The only thing we did here was add stabilizer.
Yes, and then so it's not always the machine when you're testing. Okay, sometimes you're not choosing the right recipe.
That's true.
Or
right.
You need something else.
Right set of circumstances.
Yes, you need something else in your recipe. And so sometimes, you talked about repairs.
Right.
Okay, sometimes I think people are asking machines to do things.
Yes.
That aren't
well, it's like
quite
people
possible.
You know, I'll tell you something you better always test out, and that's like a metallic thread.
Yeah.
Or let's call them specialty threads because,
sure.
You know, maybe they're not metallic. Maybe they've got a mylar in them, but it's something besides the common thread that you've been using. And people are like, oh, I have so much trouble with this metallic doesn't work on my machine. And I'm like, it's not going to work like your other thread. It may take a special needle. My big thing that I have really a lot of trouble doing is sewing slower.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Ovation, the Baby Lock Ovation speed control is, for me, it is four thick decorative threads in the looper.
Right. And it's your governor.
Yes.
It keeps you from speeding.
Don't let me speed up.
That's right.
You know?
And, you know, I can get almost any good quality metallic. There's crappy metallics, just like any other. But, yeah, if you have a good quality metallic thread and a good needle and it's the right needle, you can probably get that. But yeah, I can't speed like I like to speed.
You know,
if you think about it, you're actually asking real metal to come uncurled off of a spool, go through a sewing machine, and then, like, do these gizmo, you know, gymnastics when it gets to your fabric. That's a lot to ask a little sliver of metal.
And there's this metallic thread that I love, and I won't say the brand here, but...
Uh-oh, everybody's going to ask.
A supplier one time, I called them up, and I said, I want to order this thread. Where is it? You know, and they're like, oh, we got so many complaints about it. And I'm like, I use it all the time.
That's right.
Full speed in my commercial embroidery machine.
Right.
In fact, I had someone who wanted to buy a Baby Lock Enterprise. This was their 10 needle.
Right.
And they were like, does it work with metallic thread? And so... this is how to do good sewing machine demos episode. I threaded up every thread, every needle with metallic thread. And guess what? The word Enterprise has 10 letters in it.
Yep.
And I stitched out Enterprise in 10 different metallic threads. And some of them were different brands. Some of them were the brand I really, really like, you know, and stuff. But
well, and some of them have different effects.
Yes, yes. Right. Like different looks, you know, and it stitched out perfectly, you know. So anyway, I thought that was kind of
funny. And another thing that will matter is, do you have a good bobbin thread?
Yep.
You know, all those things matter.
Testing.
And another thing, too, is I'll betcha if you would have stitched that metallic thread on that Halloween taffeta,
you're right.
You know, without anything underneath, it would have looked like crap.
We're not going to get into this too much, but machine embroidery is a big place where testing
really
matters.
Really counts.
You need to test out your recipe.
Right.
Of stabilizer and fabric before you go to town.
Well, and digitizing matters.
Yes.
You know, there is a quality to designs. Don't think every free design on the internet is a great design.
Absolutely. So so that covers, I think, some testing about like stitches and stuff like that. So things that you could test with your stitch, maybe one last thing before the message break.
Uh-oh.
Things you would test with your stitch first are stitch length.
Mm-hmm.
The type of needle you're using before you mess with your tension.
Don't touch your tension.
It's really not.
Especially your bobbin tension.
It's really not what you should
if
be
you
screwing
think,
with.
If you think you need to go to your tension, please make sure your machine's clean first. Make sure there's no debris
anyplace. And threaded properly.
And threaded properly. Please, please, please. Because now you just changed a big factor.
Yes.
That you can't change back, and it's so hard to go back to that place where you were.
I mean, you can move the knob back, you know, but then you're messing around with things, and you might mess something. If you have unregulated top tension and you go to sew, you can mess up more stuff.
Well, that can be a several hundred dollar injury to your bobbin system.
Well, you know, when people talk about, I'll get bird's nest in my bobbin, it's not
bird's
harmless.
Birds nests are dangerous.
Yeah, it's not a harmless problem to have.
No.
It can really screw things
and
up.
And everybody understands a bird nest underneath is a problem from up above.
That's right.
It is not a problem from below.
Okay, well, this is going to end up being like an hour-long podcast, so we'll get to our message break right now.
Okay.
Mom, this podcast episode is brought to us by the So Long and So Happy edition of the Sew Here box.
Oh my goodness, where did you get that saying?
I know, somebody really smart must have thought that up. I mean, it just has so much to offer there.
That's right.
You're supposed to sew for a long time.
A long time, or like goodbye kind of a little bit in a podcast.
Yeah, you're supposed to be happy while you're sewing.
That's right. So the longer you sew, the happier you'll be.
And then also just like, so long. Thanks for listening.
So long. Farewell.
Wouldn't you like to wear a t-shirt that you made, that you self-sewed, that said so long and so happy on the front of it?
I could be very happy wearing that
in
t-shirt.
In the signature mint green. I think the hex code.
Okay, I don't think that's mint green.
I do.
It's light teal.
Okay, well, the hex code, whatever it is like 76D2C5, just in case you want to look at that on your computer. And so anyway, if you would like to do that, then you should order the last Sew Here box of 2017, which you can do by going to sewhere.com/box. Our signature keystone product in there is the custom printed fabric panel.
There's another custom product they're going to be real happy with.
There is. And we're not going to talk about telling you.
If I can keep Mallory's mouth shut, it will be a total surprise.
We might like show it somewhere. Okay.
Oh gosh. See, she cannot keep a secret. Like at all.
There's going to be a special pair of scissors.
Yes.
There's going to be a couple of very special
tools
in the box, and then some fun things for you to use to customize.
Our little custom things that we think up.
And customize your sewing space and customize your life with fabulousness from sewhere.com. So the Sew Here boxes are set to ship between December 1st and December 15th. So you pre-order them now by going to sewhere.com/box. And choose Sew Here Box Shipping when you check out to get free shipping both in the U.S. and internationally.
And I am not going to let Mallory add the number of boxes we ship out after we've already closed the orders once this time. She does that all the time. I swear, Sam and I are not going to let you do that.
Okay, well, we're going to ship out 1,000 boxes. No, but seriously, there's only going to be 250 of them. And I believe at this point, we have already sold 100. So if you're wanting one for a gift for yourself or someone else for the holiday season, or if you just like to get everything that Zadie and I make, we will put a lot of care and love,
a special love note
into these boxes. So go to sewhere.com/box and order one today.
Sewing out loud.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
And we're back.
We must be like totally enjoying ourselves today with this long podcast. Sam's going to love the editing.
You know, I'm part of a few groups like about podcasting and business and stuff. And people are like, what's your most popular content? And I'm like, we had this 45-minute podcast episode about buttonholes and people just loved it. You know, everybody in our group was talking
and
about it.
Like,
you know? They're like, oh.
Well, you know, we just, it's so funny because we did just talk to somebody yesterday in a business situation. And he's like, and you sell like sewing stuff, right? Like, you know, only we know about sewing stuff.
That's right.
Yeah. You guys, nobody else in the world knows. He's except like, you and us.
Sewing stuff. So like how many SKUs do you have? Like five. And we're like 300, you know. Okay. Anyway. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about muslins.
Okay.
Well, maybe define a muslin real quick.
What are all the other names muslins are called? Trial
test
garment, test garment.
Twal.
What's the malah?
Well, that's a different thing.
Yeah, but people call it that. That's
the
why
moulage.
The moulage. Yeah.
So that's a little different than a muslin. But so
I've heard people call it the first run.
There you go. So it's a test garment. This test garment needs to be made from fabric that is similar to the fabric that you will use for your final garment.
And here's where we need a little bit of definition. Muslin is a fabric.
Yes.
And all test garments at one time were made out of muslin because it was the least expensive fabric people, dressmakers, could get. So the term muslin that was a fabric naming term turned out to be the name of the test garment. People would say, I'm making a muslin.
Yeah. So, but if you make a muslin of a knit t-shirt, you're not going to use muslin.
Right.
Because muslin's a woven fabric.
It's like Kleenex and tissue.
Yeah. So you're going to use a fabric that's similar, and perhaps it's a little less expensive because this is your test garment.
Or at least one that you're not going to dye if you screw it up and it becomes a rag to clean the car with.
Yes, but don't use something so cheap that it does not give you the
look. Exactly.
That you're not going to like the garment in crappy fabric, right? Okay, moving on from that. Okay, so these muslins, when do you make a muslin? Well, you know, I think it depends on your experience level.
Certainly if I'm making someone's wedding dress.
Yep. Or if you're sewing for someone else.
Certainly if I'm going to cut into a fabric that was $100 a yard.
Yep.
Or more.
Uh-huh.
And that's going to vary. Some people are going to think if it's $30 a yard, they need a muslin. But what I'm saying is, you know, maybe if I'm going to make something out of $3 a yard fabric, I'm not going to get too freaked out if it doesn't fit.
No.
Or I have to ditch it or something.
And then sometimes there are certain garments where I'm like, you know, if I make this and it needs to be taken in at the waist, I can do that.
That's right.
On if my you final know,
if you
garment.
Know it's a, well,
you know?
It's just like a dress pattern that maybe has a fairly complicated bodice, but you know the skirt, you know, hangs in a circle. It's a circle skirt or a gathered skirt or whatever.
I wanted to talk.
You don't have to make the bottom.
Well, I wanted to talk about that. I wanted to say, I was thinking about this morning and I was like looking at the mirror at myself and I was like, you know, if I made a dress that had a fitted bodice and a circle skirt, I would not feel the need to muslin out that circle skirt.
Okay. I'll give you.
But
right.
Hold on a second.
Okay.
I was looking at my body, and I thought, what if somebody has a bum or a belly that is way larger than the size of the pattern that they're going to make for their bodice? And that, maybe they do.
Right.
You need to look at your body. You know, but like a circle skirt is something that literally, like if you stood in a hole on a table, would go out. Like there's enough room there, you know?
Well, for instance,
yes.
Okay, I had a woman come to me who wanted the Marilyn Monroe white halter dress.
There you go.
As her wedding dress, right? More mature bride. And we were making it. Oh, we made it. It really turned out pretty. I'm thinking about it now. But so she had a pattern. And she said, I know I want it to look like this. Now, the pattern was like 4 times smaller than what she needed.
Uh-huh.
So I was going to have to sort of draft a muslin off of how this pattern was, da-da-da. And it was a big gathered skirt.
Yeah.
Okay. And we were making it out of this fabric that she had purchased all of. We didn't know where we're probably not going to be able to source anymore. It was a crepe with a bit, it was like a cream color crepe with a big red rose on it. It was really pretty. I made like a mini skirt on her muslin because with that halter, I needed to know how that waistband fit in the back. There was no back to the dress, so I needed a skirt.
Uh-huh.
So I just made like this little sort of peplum-ish thing.
Right.
You know, that came off of it because otherwise I was not going to know how that was going to fit her.
And so I want to talk about a couple of coat cardigan situations here. Okay. So I was
not the anorak.
Yeah, the anorak. Okay. So the anorak that is still in my tube of shame over yonder, right over there.
Before she had this child, yeah, and everything.
You know, I've got two L.A. Finch fabrics. Okay. I've bought fabric for myself. Not this birthday. My birthday is in October. Not October of 2017, but October of 2015 and 2016, I bought fabric for my birthday from L.A. Finch, and I've started projects, and they are both not finished.
You're not good with birthday stuff.
No. I bought silk from them in 2015, and then I bought the linen for my anorak, yeah, in 2016. They're both not finished. So anyway, one day I'll finish them. But the anorak, okay, looking at it, looking at my body. And I thought, I really
can't. Anorak is just the style. It's the name of a style. It's what jacket. They named the jacket.
Yes,
yeah,
yes. So I'm looking at this anorak, and I see the shape of it. I see the pattern pieces. And I'm like, this just needs to fit me in my shoulders. Me, okay?
Right.
I don't have hips that went way outside of the sizing chart, you know? So I thought, if I muslined anything about this, I would just do
like the shoulder, like the bust shoulders area. Right.
Yeah, I would like have made like a bolero.
Right.
Maybe only done like the front and the back.
Right.
My arms are not larger than the sleeve pattern that was going along with this size. I measured the pattern pieces and I felt really confident. And you know what? I did not muslin that. I just measured across the back. And I measured across my back.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is fine. I'm going to wear other clothes under it. It's got a gathered waist. And you know what? I could choose the right size by doing that. But let me say the other situation. Someone else in the group shared a pattern they were making. Knit cardigan. And they said, I'm worried about my arms. And I'm worried about where it's going to, you know, fit me well, like up in the bust. She says, but I'm going to wear it open. I said, you only then have to muslin. You could just muslin one sleeve and the bust area, and then you'd know if, you know, as long as your arms aren't too asymmetrical. But you can kind of get away with a little bit of that sometimes, depending on your project.
Right. So we're not talking about absolutely having to make the entire garment. A lot of times people only make one sleeve.
Yeah.
They don't put a zipper in, you know, they just, you know, pin it up the back or up the front or up the side with, I mean, so, you know, a muslin does not have to be pristinely finished. It does have to be pristinely measured, cut, and made.
Yeah, you can't skimp on the precision.
You don't want to skimp on your precision. But, you know.
But if you know you're going to wear a thigh or knee-length cardigan open, you do not have to muslin out the part.
You know, I've had problems with clothes a lot of times that have too much volume for me.
There you go.
Like it's a gathered skirt and I'm just not big enough that I need all that or something like that. Well, I didn't probably muslin it, but I can take out of the skirt.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm not winding up with too little.
Right. And, you know, one garment that you kind of have to make like the entire garment to know if it's going to fit you right?
Jumpsuit. No.
Well, what? Maybe.
I gave you another one.
A bra.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Bras.
Well, those are foundation garments. It's a whole different thing.
Yeah. I mean, and I guess if you're experienced at bra making and you've made some before and you can make some inferences. Right. But with bras, you're taking tissue that is never in that position when you don't have clothes on. And you're wanting it to go someplace. And you're using a combination of, like, these stable and stretchy fabrics and stuff. And I really think that it's kind of a unique situation. Underwires, if you're doing an underwire, you kind of got to make the whole
thing. Almost have to just make it.
Because I've sort of tested out a bra before by just making the front and being like, okay, this is the right cup size, da-da-da-da-da. But then I had to make the whole thing and, like, take some volume out of the cup or something like that. Right. You know, you don't know exactly how it's going to lay on your body until you get it all together.
Well, and I think with a bra, you know, you have the other problem of if you are any soft tissue or tissue that is like fluid.
Yep.
Is harder to fit than something that is firm.
And we all
because it moves around.
Yeah, we all have different areas of our bodies
that are
firm
like that.
And soft. And no, the boobs are, you know, if you were naked, your boobs are not in the same place where they are in a bra. I mean, some people's are. good for you.
You're very young. Yes. Or you've had surgery.
Yeah, I mean, and that's great, you know, but like I know that there's just no way for me to get that idea, you know, versus when I'm naked, my like butt and legs, they're pretty much in the same place as if I had clothes on. But that's not true for everybody. And I'm in a lingerie group.
Yeah.
And the people who ask for recommendations will say, I have this like waist and hip measurement and I'm very squishy.
Yeah.
Or they will say, I have this waist and hip measurement and I am very firm.
Right.
Because they're asking about things like garter belts and
That's
corsets.
Right. And how they want
so
it to fit.
Maybe you don't want, maybe sometimes you want something to squeeze you and sometimes you don't. Huh? Huh?
Well,
you
know? I was in an aerial class and I said to this woman, let me see your top. I mm-hmm. like that top. I said, now how is it? Is there a bra in there or whatever? And she's like, no. And I was like, I don't understand how you can get by with that. And she goes, well, yours are real and mine aren't. And I was like, oh, okay. So she had some different stitching done.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yeah. And because I was like, how'd she get all this support out of this t-shirt? Because I really liked it. You
know? Really liked the way her boots looked, right?
Yeah, I wanted to look like her.
So if you have – this can totally be dependent on your body situation, you know. And I think that happens a lot in the lingerie group. And you know what else they talk about in that group? They'll talk about breast implants, but they'll also talk about breast reductions and how doctors tell people, I'm going to make you a 36C. And they're like, and the doctors don't know what they're talking
about. Okay, why do they say that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like,
because
no.
The other thing is if you gain or lose weight or anything,
absolutely,
things change. You know, or people say, I'm going to make you an A cup, what, or B
yeah,
cup, or
C cup. Or
I don't even know what that, but it's really silly.
Yeah.
Now, when you do get an implant, they usually talk about them in the sense of volumes, 500 cc's or 1,000 cc implant.
And that's what Quinn said again, bringing up Quinn again. She said, the doctors think in cc's, they don't understand exactly how cup size is always determined in the bra fitting industry.
And again, here we go with the old bra fitting thing again. That's when you make your muslin. What undergarments are you supposed to be wearing?
There you go.
The proper ones.
And when you make your muslin,
the ones you're going to wear with that garment.
I'd say this is Victoria is a group member who is pregnant at the moment. And she was making her made-to-measure leggings. And she said, I wanted a little more room in these leggings. So she measured loose. And I said, no. Don't do that, you know, and they were baggy on her and she measured tight again. She was like, I went tighter to myself and they worked. And so you have to kind of pay attention to the pattern. If it is a pattern that's a knit that has some negative ease, like you said, you don't want to put too much volume in the garment either.
Right.
That can be as bad at cutting out a big size. A size too big for you can be just as detrimental because like if the arm size You can't be recutting that sometimes.
Nope.
That's a place where the smaller garment size won't necessarily fit onto the larger pattern piece.
That's
you know, and so you're screwed if you cut into your $30, $100 a yard fabric. So think about that, too, in terms of muslining. You can't always just take away. That's why we do these testing garments, you know. So you don't always have to test the entire garment. Sometimes you do. You were talking about skirt volume.
Right.
Do you remember when Julian made a dress for a friend?
Okay.
And I don't think the top was wrap, but the skirt was a wrap.
Uh-huh.
And she was a very hippie individual, you know, and he was like, we think we want more volume in this skirt.
Right.
So that she's not worried about this.
Right.
Wrap
flying
skirt
open.
Coming open,
right.
You know. And so I think he did have to muslin out. That big skirt.
Or sometimes you're going to wind up putting like a faux panel under something like that because it, you know, it's going to fly open or whatever. You need to know that.
That took a lot of fabric.
Yeah.
That skirt was a voluminous skirt that actually did have to get muslined out in order to provide the correct fit for a client, too.
And you're looking for the drape.
Yep, the drape. Yeah. And I think that he made it out of some, you know, really gorgeous like wax print fabric that was not like something that you want to
waste.
Screw up. Yeah,
right,
or waste.
Right,
yeah, exactly. So there is, sometimes you do need to be muslining that stuff out.
You know, and a lot of times if you're sewing for someone else, a muslin is an excellent idea because you don't have that body there to fit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so if you get that muslin and you get it right, then, you know, when you go to make the real live garment, you know you're going to be okay.
Muslins also, I didn't know this was going to go here. Muslins need to be tried on the wearer.
Oh, yeah.
Not just on a dress form.
No, no. Everything needs to be tried on the wearer. A dress form, I'm telling you guys, you could lay in a vat of plaster Paris,
yeah.
and do your body and, you know, re-pour that body, and that garment will not fit you. Like, you move, you know, you squish and get, you're squishy some places, you're firm other, you know, a dress, when people start talking about dress forms and which is the best, I really find that a hard thing. You know, I use a dress form to sort of drape things or finish things off. I do not use, you know, my aunt did costuming in Hollywood and everybody had their own dress form.
Right.
So Betty Davis had a dress form and so had a, you know, and that they had a place to start. And of course they had slopers and everything for all of them.
Right.
You know, but it had to be tried on the person.
Absolutely. And even I was reading and I got you that book a long time ago, that Hollywood costume book.
Yeah.
They'd even try to find like body doubles.
Right.
People who were really right. shaped like them.
Right.
Like the star and yeah. still yeah. wasn't quite right. And the moving. Right. The moving and the squishy.
You know, I mean, somebody's shoulder can be set differently. I mean,
right.
there's just some, you know, I think the other thing we need to talk about, and we're going to make this a different podcast, is why ready to wear doesn't fit you and why those patterns don't fit you.
Yeah, I agree. And I'll put that in the Trello. If you don't have Trello, go ahead and get Trello. I should put my email address because I get like not a kickback really, but. I get the ability to put, like, pictures in my Trello when someone uses my link.
So do you feel, you know, as zig and zag that we have covered this subject?
I think so. I think that the dress form – oh, no, one more thing.
Oh, see, I knew she'd – if I tried to get her off, I knew she'd say something
else. One more thing. When you're Muslining –
And she has to have the last word.
Yes. I'm sure you'll get it. When you're Muslining, when you're making a garment, try it on. As often as possible.
Sewing in your underwear.
Try it on at every step.
Yep.
This is why you stay stitch things like necklines and whatnot, because you don't want to warp it while you're trying it on. But boy, it can save you a lot of time. Don't make an entire garment and then try it on. That's what going to the store is for. You know, try on the garment as you go to check for fit. That's my
absolutely.
That's my,
that was a good thing, Mallory.
Yeah. You do get the last word, Mom.
So long and so happy.
Thanks for listening to Sewing Out Loud. For even more expert sewing advice, visit sewhere.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.